Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. You can find him at thelasallenetwork.com. Tom, you're writing today about quiet quitting. What is that?
Well, it's this trend that people are saying, you know, there's two perspectives on it. One is that people aren't giving their all and they're just doing their job and they're not actually quitting, but they're not giving as much of what's going on. So the air quotes of quitting. And the other is the perspective of the people are just not giving their life to their job anymore. They're doing everything that's asked, but no more, and going about it. And that's kind of the argument of where people sit within their cubicle of how much they're willing to give to the company.
Their cubicle or their den. I don't mind a job being a job. That can be okay. But that first group is interesting. People that it sounds like are running out the clock for as long as they can, working from home, air quotes around working. Is that what you're describing?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I've said all along, John, is that you've got to look at this and say, if you had people working for you in your home, whether it was somebody painting or doing the lawn or building your house, and they were hourly, would you want them to go about their job in the exact same way of lackadaisically walking back and forth to get stuff and to do this and biding their time? Or would you want them to actually care about what they're doing in the work? And that's really the line here is because the other people will say, oh, no, we're working. We're doing everything. But when it's over for the day. And I think that there has always been, this is not new in that perspective. Since there's been jobs, there's always been people who do the minimum it takes to keep their job. And then there's people who go above and beyond and they get promoted, get bonuses, make more money. The problem I have is with the latter group when they complain that they're not getting raises or bonuses or more money.
I know people who are close enough to retirement. They're just kind of hanging on. And, you know, so the conversation becomes, you know, how much are you busting your hump, especially if you're working from home? How much are you busting your hump for the company when maybe you're just a few years out and you don't love the job or the company anymore, but you don't want to quit it either? I'll bet there's a lot of people on that boat. And what a challenge for managers to try and identify that and then figure out what to do with that.
I feel like I've finally made some headway with you, John. You're empathizing with the managers now.
Is there a lot of that out there, do you say?
I think there is from a standpoint of, you know, people that really want to have their cake and eat it too. And I think that if you're not giving 100%, both in getting the work done and emotionally what you're contributing, then you can't really be upset if management has a problem with it. And that's the real cat and mouse game here is how are you going to be when management catches up and says, you know what, it's fine that you're doing the minimum or you're mailing it in a little bit until we find somebody better. And if we find somebody better, guess what? They're going to get the work. They're going to keep their job. And there's a lot of executives out there that when there's a recession, that's the opportunity they have to let go of some people that haven't really been giving it their all.
I think it's a challenge, though, to try and motivate people and motivate and monitor people when they're working from home. I think everybody would be better under this circumstance if they were in the office and the managers in the office were doing a good job.
I think you're 100% right. Number one, it's so hard doing it remotely. Not in any situation, but especially in this type of environment where we're talking about workers that are mailing it in and quiet quitting, number one. Number two is I think you're right. Managers have to be doing their job as well. And a lot of managers aren't always as engaged as they should be. And number three, and I'll leave you with this, John, because I know we're running out of time, but remember that movie Moneyball? And there's a scene where the general manager, played by Brad Pitt, goes up to David Justice and he says, I want as much baseball as you got left in you, and you want to stay in the show as long as you can, but you got to do it my way.
Yeah, it's a great scene. It's a great scene, right? Particularly when he then reminds him that the Yankees are paying him to play against him, which that's the comeuppance moment of the movie. Let's continue to follow that. And Tom, thanks for your time today.
Always good to be with you, John. Stay healthy and stay well.
Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarth at Work. He joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN to talk about time off. Why is that on the radar today, Philip?
Yeah, it's sort of hitting the radar pretty hard, and it's a shock to the system for many companies, particularly because their managers, John, are missing many of the cues that they need to respond to employee requests for medical leave and family leave. And the problem has arisen because employees that were formerly remote weren't always telling the boss, I'm going to the doctor, I'm taking my mom for dialysis treatment, I'm going to adopt a kid in a week. Managers got out of sync and out of practice knowing to listen for leave requests. And a real issue with that is, on the one hand, they don't know when to say yes or no to these requests under the law. And two, they're not requesting the paperwork that allows them to at least track the time these employees are taking. So it's been a real surprise for companies that their managers are ill-equipped with respect to returning staff members.
Technically, are those employees that are doing that out of line?
You know, it's a great question, and it really depends on the kind of leave laws or the kind of policies that apply. So, for example, we're working with a storage company where one employee asked his manager recently for time off to go adopt a poodle. That's not required under the law, but if he was in fact going to adopt a kid under federal law at that company, the time would have been an automatic give. The manager had some vague recollection that, yes, I got to agree to adoption. So he just said yes and kept saying yes. Now that same company has got to agree to adoption of animals, dogs, cats, plus humans through the end of the year because the manager wasn't aware and the employee kind of took advantage in that case. So you got to be careful so your managers don't say yes too much or no too much.
Funny question, isn't it, when you have to ask what species they're going to be adopting?
That's right. I mean, the key there, and it's really remarkable, is that the laws are pretty generous when you're, you know, acquiring any kind of child, birth, adoption, foster care. But under federal law, depending on the employer, it is really limited to humans. So it's a clear-cut case, but managers used to know to ask one more question or escalate the conversation to someone who could request the right paperwork. And the other issue that we're seeing all over the place, John, is KG employees are actually going to their managers and saying, you know, I need 10 days off to take care of my sick mom. I need 5 days off for chronic migraines. The manager doesn't remember the rules, doesn't call human resources or the lawyer, and no paperwork goes out to the employee. So that same employee comes back a few weeks later and says, by the way, I'm pregnant. I want my full 12 weeks I get for pregnancy. Well, the clock on those 12 weeks should have already been counting down because all those other events were part of the same 12 weeks. So you got to count time off the clock. But if your managers don't know what to escalate, you're giving employees one gift after another.
Well, maybe you've started to answer my question then, because if I have to care for a sick loved one, this was a big issue during COVID when we were all locked down. The conversation was, should I be given time off to care for that loved one? Do companies, does it depend by the company or maybe the state, do they have to grant you kind of a sick leave for your significant others?
Yeah, that's a very important question. And there's a patchwork of laws, local, county, state, and federal, that include caring for a relative. So it really depends on the law, but under federal law, for example, it's parents, spouse, and children. But it gets expanded depending on the other laws you're looking at. And as you said, John, company policies can be even more generous when it comes to taking care of someone who's ill, whether it's COVID or something else. So the idea here is you want to make sure your managers know who their employees are and what they qualify for, because it's not about the manager saying yes or no in the moment. It's about realizing I'm hearing kind of a red flag here. Mm-hmm. This looks very familiar, whether it's the employee or a family member. I got to make the right call. so we have the right decision being made by somebody else.
You know, a minute ago I asked, though, if technically, in fact, the employees are out of line when they were taking a lot of half days for medical or other reasons from home and the managers weren't that able to track it. They weren't reporting it, either of them. And I wonder if that is a bit of a revelation, too. That is, maybe we don't need to count every half day as long as the work's being done. They were getting away with it on the sly when they were working from home and you didn't even notice. So maybe it's not that important to count the days off as is the work getting done.
Well, you just identified an enormously important debate that's happening in a lot of workplaces. Bosses, lawyers like myself, are getting some pushback from managers who are saying it wasn't a problem when they were remote. Why is it a problem now? But some of them are seeing the flip side, John, which is you let the employee go to adopt the Dachshund as opposed to the baby. You let the employee take too many days off. Number one, other employees will demand the same thing, and you may need those employees on a deadline day. And number two, you can never really be consistent. And if you're inconsistent, sooner or later, you're begging for a class action. So part of this is making sure you're fair, and part of this is making sure that your employees are there when you really need them. So it's a balancing act, and companies are navigating through that right now.
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work, Seyfarth, seyfarthatwork.com. Thanks, Philip. We'll talk again.
Pleasure. Thanks so much, John.
Dennis Rodkin's a sometimes guest here. He's going to join us for the rest of this half hour, the residential real estate reporter at craneschicagobusiness.com. Yeah, welcome to the studio. Nice to see him.
Hi, John. Yeah, nice to see you, too.
What a nice time to be downtown in Chicago, too. Huh?
Isn't it beautiful?
It really is. This is kind of an ongoing conversation I have with myself and anybody that cares to hear it. But this weekend, I was with some folks who are residents of the city and were last weekend, 2 weekends ago now, just spending the time in the city. They were on the Red Line. They went to the Sox game. They enjoyed the riverfront and areas of the Loop. And we're just singing its praises about how nice it was to see people downtown. And when the weather is nice, this city is glorious.
Yeah, I don't like to go on an August vacation because I feel like I'm on one here. I have family coming in from Philadelphia for the weekend, actually Labor Day weekend, and we were talking about what to do, and they said, we just want to be on the lakefront.
I have two different sets of friends from Minnesota that are coming down this month, and they're asking me, where do we go, what do we see, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, they want to eat some pizza. They're going to get, which one are they going to get, Pete, that you and I were talking about? They were going to get Chicago Pizzas and Oven Grinder. Chicago Pizza and Oven Grinder, which isn't the place I would first go to, you know? I'd send them to Geno's or Lou's or someplace like that. The place I've been singing the praises of lately is Robert's Pizza on the little inlet right over here. It's on the other side of the same building, essentially, as Carson's.
Oh,
River
yeah.
East. And Winter's Jazz Club there. What a fun little hideaway for pizza that is. But anyway, the city looks good, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
Now you can rent out your kitchen or basement bar by the hour in Chicago. What is this story?
It's fascinating to me. This is a thing called Knock Knock. They debuted yesterday, Monday, in Chicago only. They're launching in Chicago to, you know, try it all out before they go national. And the idea is, it's like an Airbnb by the hour, but it's not so much a place you would sleep. I've got a beautiful kitchen. It's not doing anything when I'm at work. Wouldn't you like to have a party there, shoot some tabletop photos there? I've got one woman has a great backyard and basement in Roseland. People who have apartments might want to have a birthday party, a baby shower. Rent her backyard for $40 an hour, rent her basement for $40 an hour. It's an interesting new concept.
So it's an Airbnb by the hour.
By the hour, yeah. Though, again, it's not there. So far, there are no bedrooms listed in Chicago, so it's more like... And it started for an interesting reason. The guy, pardon me, the CEO is a runner. He's based in somewhere in California. He had a meeting in Berkeley, and he wanted to go for a run after the meeting. Where do I take a shower after I run? Where do I put my clothes? He thought, why couldn't I, you know, rent somebody's bathroom for an hour, take a shower, change my clothes, leave my sweaty clothes there? And out of that came this idea that you might rent your music room, your man cave, whatever it would be, by the hour.
Hmm. I think a lot of us think, okay, you got to give me a lot of money for that, because who are you? What's your hygiene? What are you doing in my house?
Background checks on both sides for the host and the guest.
Okay, and that company is called?
Knock Knock.
Knock
with
Knock.
N-O-C-K, N-O-C-K.
And that's, is that exclusively in Chicago?
For now, it's just in Chicago. Their launch is here, and then as they work things out, they'll move to other cities.
Garrett Popcorn owners sell their Lake Forest home for $4.72 million. That's a lot of popcorn.
That's a lot of popcorn. Yeah, it is. And the one thing, the thing I said when I tweeted this story is, I don't know how long the line was outside their house. But because it sold privately, they didn't list it on the open market. It was sold essentially agent to agent, and it showed up in the tax records. They bought Garrett's back, I think, in 2005. Garrett's was founded in the 1940s and had four stores by the time they bought it. Now it has 48 stores, not only in Chicago, but around the world. They had the house for nearly 20 years, something like 18 years. So my guess is they were empty nesters, but because they didn't talk to me, I don't know why they sold.
Yeah, it's a lovely home. I'm looking at some of your interior pictures. Look at that wine room. La-di-da.
Yeah.
And a swimming pool.
And a pool.
They got a cement pond.
The houses with cement ponds, they are doing really, really well still. I mean, that first summer of COVID, there were people, speaking of renting your basement or something like that, there were people who would call a real estate agent who had a house listed with a pool and say, can I just rent the pool until you sell the house? And then we saw real estate agents putting the pool photo first in the listing. You know, instead of like when you drive up to the house, it's got this great front porch. You would see, look at this great pool. And then I saw agents photoshopping a pool in. Rather than saying, this has a really big yard, they would say, this is what this big yard would look like with a pool.
Hmm.
It's been kind of an amazing thing to see these last couple of years.
Because in-ground pools have been a bit of a liability, really.
They were. It used to be, I did a story, I think, in the summer of 2020, when COVID was really starting to rage. It used to be, you know, you sort of thought, ah, geez, I have a pool. I appeal to a very small piece of the market. And suddenly you appealed to a much larger piece of the market. And there was one family I spoke to. They had been talking about taking the pool out. They'd had it for a long time. Their kids were grown. They hadn't been using it. They thought, well, you know, maybe we take the pool out. And then their agent said, oh, no, 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 no. Keep that pool.
The demand was so great, and then you had that coupled with supply chain issues that I just remember this as an anecdote of one of the strange things about the pandemic is early on, one of the things that you could not get enough of was chlorine.
Oh.
Chlorine was suddenly a valued commodity because everybody had a pool, everybody was getting a pool, everybody was using their pool. There wasn't enough chlorine to go around. Local homes are selling faster than ever.
Faster, yeah. It's so in July, this data came out in August, the numbers were that for the metro area, for the 9-county metro area, homes that sold in July sold an average of 18 days on the market. In the city, it was an average of 25 days on the market. That's the last record was the previous July. July, August, they're usually the fastest times.
Really?
But prior to the pandemic, we were looking at 40, 50, 60 days. Now you're looking at the average home sells in 18 days.
I thought the price was coming down, though, a little bit.
Prices haven't come down yet. Prices in our region have stopped growing as fast. So they're going up about every week. They're up about 2, 3% from a year ago, while they were up in the double digits. They were up 10, 11, 12% from a year ago.
So, Dennis, it's still a seller's market.
Oh, yeah. Well, because an inventory is so tight. One of the reasons they're selling so fast is no matter what the price is, there are very few homes on the market. I think there's 30% less inventory than there was a year ago. And a year ago, it was tight. One of the reasons there's so little on the market is that we had such a huge volume of sales as the pandemic boom just sort of pushed everybody into different homes, not brand newly built homes, that there just aren't that many left to put on the market. So inventory is so tight, I have to jump, and I still am probably paying more than the asking price. We have, in most of our suburbs and neighborhoods, the average sold price is still 100% or more of the asking price, which we never saw prior to the pandemic.
Dennis Rodkins, the residential real estate reporter at CranesChicagoBusiness.com. We'll talk to him more about that. Bill and Melinda Gates, or Bill Gates, sold a home in Chicago. They had a property in the city, right? I didn't realize that until just now. We'll talk more about that and other real estate stories in a minute on WGN. Let's get you more business news right now. Here is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. American Airlines is adding shorter regional flights to and from O'Hare Airport. The airline is partnering with the regional airline Air Wisconsin to operate up to 60 planes under the American Eagle banner beginning in March. Most of the new flights are expected to serve Chicago. Air Wisconsin currently serves dozens of cities in the Midwest, Northeast, and Southeast. Air Wisconsin currently flies routes for United Airlines. That arrangement is ending next year. A federal court has ordered Morton Grove Pharmaceuticals to stop manufacturing and distributing drugs that may have been adulterated. The Justice Department says the company violated the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act by failing to have adequate procedures in place to prevent cross-contamination of equipment, failing to reject drug lots using a contaminated ingredient, and failing to fully investigate the root cause of contamination. Morton Grove Pharmaceuticals has stopped production and planned 66 permanent layoffs as a result. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Previously on the Business of Food.
Our buddy Max Armstrong, the WGN legend, said I should ask you about the floating tractor.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. For
and we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Live your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. As Farm Progress Show director Matt Youngman was about to tell us yesterday, one of the many new attractions next week at the show in Boone, Iowa, will be a floating tractor.
Yes, that is always exciting. There's a, as a part of the drainage system for that facility, it creates a retention pond, and Mitos has got a tractor outfitted with tires big enough that it actually floats. And I was fortunate enough to actually drive that tractor. You steer it with the rear wheel brakes. So if you want to go to the right, you push down on the right brake and the left wheel spins and pushes you around. And when you drive a tractor off into a pond, it, about every nerve in your body is telling you to stop that and back up and don't do that. But went ahead and did it, and by gosh, it just kind of drives down in, and the water comes up to the bottom of the doors and it floats, and it's quite an experience.
I'm not sure what the practical applications of that would be, but our chief engineer, Bill Murdoch, says that floating tractor would sure come in handy patrolling some of the swampy ground around the WGN transmitter. Elsewhere at Farm Progress this year,
there will be some things that after the show, everybody will say, oh, did you see this? Did you see that? And I think you're going to see that's autonomous stuff. That's going to be the floating tractor. You know, Geringhoff is bringing the world's largest corn head to this year's Farm Progress Show to display. It's a 24-row corn head, so a 60-foot corn head. And then I'm aware of some other things that are going to be unveiled on Tuesday morning that nobody will let me talk about yet. But everybody kind of tries to do some one-upsmanship to steal the show every year.
And there's music. Lee Bryce performed at Decatur last year. He's back again this year in Boone.
That's a great partnership with Case IH. He's a brand ambassador for Case IH, and they've elected now for the second year to have him come to the Farm Progress Show and put on a free concert Wednesday night.
From the farm to your belly, today is National Sponge Cake Day, and oh, it's National Cuban Sandwich Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Dennis Rodkin, a real estate reporter for Crane's Chicago Business. You ought to write up Bloomington, Indiana, too.
I was there this spring for a wedding. My nephew's wedding. It is a beautiful place.
Well, you know, we do this feature on Thursdays, and we call it Best of the Midwest. So we've gone as far north as northern Michigan, say Petoskey or the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, and then down to Bloomington, Indiana. There's a lot of nice half-day drives right here in the Midwest that sometimes you don't think about or you completely forget about.
30 years in Chicago, I'd never been to Bloomington. It was my nephew married a girl who was from there, I should say a woman who was from there. And so it was the first time, and it was a beautiful, small city with, as they said, rolling hills. I was surprised.
Mansion connected to Hollywood royalty lists for $15 million, Dennis Rodkin wrote. The Lake Forest mansion that Nancy Hughes, the widow of movie maker John Hughes, bought the year before she died, hit the market publicly for $15 million. Almost 12,000 square feet on 5 1/4 acres in Lake Forest. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had been in Lake Forest for quite a while. She, shortly after his death, which, what was that, 2004, I think, she bought a house, and then in 2018, bought a very nice house, and then in 2018, she moved to this. She paid $12 million for it, and she, it was less than 2 years later that she died, and it has sat for a while, and now is on the market at $15 million. And the thing for me is, I reported this, I think it's in that story, the only other house ever to sell, or the only other house to sell for $10 million or more in Lake Forest since 2007 is that house when she bought it for $12 million. So if you're asking $15, I mean, it's got beach, it's set back from the road, it's East Lake Forest, or what's known as Very East Lake Forest, VELF, it's all the way over at the lake. It's a wonderful piece of property, and the difference between when she bought it in 2018 and today is, we were all reporting in 2018-19, Lake Forest is dead, nobody wants to buy these big houses, they're too expensive, they're far from the city, and then the pandemic completely revitalized the market in Lake Forest, so maybe $15 million is not out of line, but again, even during this pandemic, nothing has sold for $10 million or more, and there have been homes listed at that price.
When you drive through some of those neighborhoods and you look at those fabulous houses and you can see as much as you can see. I always want to see 20 kids running around playing kickball and people living a swell life, and I think there's probably two people living there. Maybe they're not even there all the time. You know, it's kind of, what light can you shed on who are these people?
Well, I think there are more people in Lake Forest like what you describe now, because one of the reasons people weren't buying up there is giant lawn, big old house, you know, built in the 20s on a very grand scale. So in the period before the pandemic, people told me many times, you know, nobody wants that. They want to be close to the soccer fields. They want to be close to work, that sort of thing. But then the pandemic comes along and both spouses need offices, you need a classroom, and you want private outdoor space, just like we were talking about swimming pools.
Yeah.
So they became, those big estate homes for people who had the money to buy them became very attractive. Rather than raise your kids in a penthouse downtown, because you can't, at that time, couldn't get them to the beaches. And again, you needed offices and homework rooms and everything else. Those homes became much more appealing to people who could afford them.
Go to chicagobusiness.com. You can also read your story, Can't Afford a Pied-a-Terre, Try a Share. We were talking about renting a pool or
right.
a bathroom. What's this?
This is another interesting new one. This is called Vinci Life. This has started in Chicago. There actually are versions of this in other cities by other names. But the idea is buy a part of a condo. Four of us, eight of us, buy a condo. But rather than my having to recruit you and John Hansen and a bunch of other WGN staff, let's all get together and do this. I don't mean to imply that I'm staff, sorry. Get all our brothers to buy in together or something like that. You just buy a piece and Vinci Life arranges the other people buying pieces. It's not a timeshare. You're not buying time. You're actually buying real property. You're just only buying a piece of it.
Can you sell it then when you want?
Yeah, you put it on. They have these listed
sure.
on the multiple listing service. The larger company in California lists everything on the multiple listing service. They've had resales. So the idea is for $350,000, I get 1/8 of a $2.4 million condo. And because I'm not coming in all the time.
And
I'm an empty nester. You know, I'm only going to come in some weekends. I might be commuting. I've got a remote home, but I have to be in the office a couple of weeks out of the month. This is what that's geared toward.
Dennis Rodkin, residential real estate reporter, Cranes, ChicagoBusiness.com. Nice to see you.
Thanks, John.